200 years since they invaded Aboriginal land.
The land belongs to us. We belong to the land.
Government is trying to take away from us.
Don't call me a problem. I am not the problem. I have never left my country, nor have I ceded any part of it.
Let's talk. Triple A's flagship program that continues to elevate the diverse voices of First Nations people across the country. Centered around the unceded sovereignty of First Nations people in this country, honouring the history with a solutions-based focus on the future. With your host, Pomeroy journalist, Danny Tierce Johnson.
Hello and welcome to Let's Talk. I'm Danny Tierce Johnson, Pomeroy journalist from Moree. I'd like to start the show by acknowledging country. I acknowledge the traditional owners from the lands that we broadcast from, and I'd like to pay my respects to their elders past and present, and I extend that greeting all across this beautiful black nation of ours today, particularly over to Noongar country in Perth, thinking of you mob today. Today on the show, it's a tough one. I just want to let our audience out there know that we are talking about some tough issues, and which may be triggering to you and your family, so I just want to say that up front. The way a police officer pinned a young woman on the ground for almost 2 minutes with his leg on her back contributed to her death, among other factors, the WA coroner has reported. I'm talking about the tragic case of Miss Wynne. It's heartbreaking. As an Aboriginal journalist, covering these cases has been extremely difficult over the years because I know what the families go through in coronial inquests. Today on the line, I have Miss Wynne's grandmother, Jenny, on the line. First of all, Jenny, how are you?
I'm okay.
Would you just mind introducing yourself, your mob and your country, please, Aunt?
My name is Jenny Brayton. I am an Nunda woman, the Aboriginal woman from the Midwest area. My granddaughter is Noongar Yamdi Nunda. From Western Australia.
Thanks for joining us today, Aunt. I know this is a hard conversation for you, but it's always nice to make that cultural connection as we start the show and begin our yarn for our mob out there. And I'd just like to introduce Karina Hawtrey with the National Justice Project. Karina, how are you? Your mob and your country, please, sister.
Yeah, I'm good, thank you, Danny. I'm a Gomalpay lawyer and I'm on Eora Country in Sydney talking to you today.
Yeah, well, the National Justice Project has been an amazing initiative, and the work that you guys have been doing with families has been so needed, Karina. I came across your work a couple of years ago when I was working for another media org. Can you tell us, start talking about this case, the case of Miss Wynne? Just such a tragic case. Tragic seems to be a loose word we use these days. It's a heartbreaking case of loss and grief. Can you tell us a bit about the case, Karina?
I can. And, yeah, this is a really sad case, unfortunately. And, you know, Miss Wynne is not too far in age from me, and so I think it really really did hit me, you know, working with the family on this case. Miss Wynne was a 26-year-old mother of three beautiful little children when she, stopped breathing when she was being detained by officers of the WA police force. In a tragic kind of story, as you've said, Danny, she unfortunately was, you know, as some of us do, struggle from mental health struggles, and she was getting help for that in hospital when, sadly, you know, her daughter was taken out of her custody, and she then ended up escaping from the mental health facility and hospital that she was in. And then, later on, a couple of weeks later, police ran into her, and unfortunately she had another negative interaction with police. They searched her mother's home where she was living, and she was, you know, as you would be, frightened by what was going on. And, you know, the police really left her, left her at her mother's apartment. She was, you know, anxious, traumatised. And then, sadly, she's had a mental health, crisis, and she's ended up, on this situation running down the Albany Highway in Perth. and police have apprehended her on the highway and really dragged her to the side of the road effectively, and they've restrained her there. And you know, she was placed face down in the prone position with her hands handcuffed behind her back. And, you know, she wasn't struggling against police. She hadn't committed any offence. They were just, you know, trying to get her then to be in an ambulance to go to hospital to get the help that she needed. But, you know, we see this time and time again, you know, too much force being used against, you know, our mob. And she was held down, three police officers around her, and a fourth later joined. And with a knee in her back, she was held down on the side of the road there and lost consciousness. And sadly, she never regained consciousness and passed away a couple of days later in Royal Perth Hospital.
Just unbelievable. An unbelievable sequence of events that led to a young mother of three being tragically killed by WA police, who have learnt nothing over the years, particularly in relation to Miss Dew. For you, Jenny, that must be heartbreaking, just to rehear all that again, considering that you've just been through a coronial inquest.
Yeah.
And you know, history repeats for your family, doesn't it, Auntie Jen?
It sure does, because Miss Dew was also a granddaughter of mine. That was Carol Rowe is my first cousin. Yeah, so it's like triple, because in 1999 I lost my son as a result of a death in custody.
And
my son, and 20 years to the day, his daughter, Miss Wynn, had passed away by the hands of the police. So that's about three times, but my son and my granddaughter for me, you know, yeah.
I just can't imagine what you're going through, Auntie Jen. You know, we talk about transgenerational trauma, and this has been a transgenerational, loss to, like you said, 20 years to the day. You know, you've lost your son and now your granddaughter. You know, how's it been for you? How are you feeling? And I guess, you know, what can we do to support, you know, you and yours?
How am I feeling? How can I put it into words?
I can't imagine.
How can I put this into words, you know? I mean, I lost my son in a tragic death in custody in Albany in 1999. And that was 23 years now. That was tragic enough. When I lost my son, I nearly lost myself. I didn't, you know, I was suicidal, and I was post-traumatic stress disorder I was diagnosed with, and I was on antidepressants and sleeping tablets and self-medicating, and it took me a while to realise that I had other children that might need me. Mm. And it's been and then 20 years later, I lose my granddaughter in between that Miss June. But now my granddaughter in tragic circumstances. So it's been really a roller coaster for me. And I'm not getting any younger. I'm in my 60s.
Yeah, I just can't imagine. And,
so it's pretty hard to put it into words. I mean, you know, I keep seeing my granddaughter running down the middle of the Albany Highway and being apprehended by the police and slammed down in a prone position, and I just keep seeing that flashback ever since the inquest not long ago, where we had to sit in a courthouse with about 11 police officers all sitting up there with their full uniform on and being interviewed one after another, and was hearing each other's witnesses' statements. We felt as a family, well, I felt really intimidated by their presence, you know, and it was like we didn't see the CCTV until that day of the inquest, the third day of the inquest, but yet the police, all the police officers saw that CCTV footage, and the coroner's office, they saw it, but the family And me, we never saw it until the third day of the inquest. So it was pretty traumatic seeing that. And just having those police all present, it was like, oh my goodness, here we go again, because I went to inquest for my son as well.
Mm.
You know, we had, for my son, it was, they actually entered a plea of guilty for their negligence and their duty of care. So that was at least something, but I couldn't take it any further without new evidence, which we didn't have. But for my granddaughter, it's just been, it's a repeat all over again in different circumstances and more tragic. And I'm thinking, well, how much more can I take, you know? How much more? But I will, yeah. I will try and get justice for my granddaughter if I can. I'll go as far as I possibly can for her and her three little children that were robbed of a mother. They got to grow up without a mum, you know? And that's my most concern, is just seeing those beautiful little kids and they got no mummy.
Yeah. And now that pressure's on you.
Yeah.
Unfairly.
Yeah.
And I don't even know how you're talking to me today, the strength and courage that you have, even just jumping on this show and talking to us and talking about it. I'm just in totally in awe of you, what you've been through in your life and the circumstances, the tragedies that you've had to still be here, you know, all the battles, mental health, depression, anxiety, and you're still here talking to us, aren't you? You're just an absolute legend, honestly.
Yeah, well, at the moment I'm just having a bit of problems sleeping and... I'm on my way to see a doctor. Got an appointment at 11:30 to get some antidepressants and some sleeping tablets because we've still got a long battle to go to try and get some accountability from the police department, you know?
Yeah. Hey, Karina, can you explain to our audiences, I guess before we talk more about this case and the facts surrounding it, could you explain to our audience what the coronial inquest is? And I guess that process, as a journalist, I've sat in many a coronial inquest, and I'd rather sit there than the families, to be honest, because, you know, the families, aren't, as Aunt said, the families aren't warned as to what they sort of show and what they go through, and it's often the person dying in slow motion over and over and over on repeat, fast forward, rewind, watch it again, that sort of thing. But, can you give the audience an insight into the coronial inquest, please, Karina?
Yes, of course. So, yeah, I mean, it's a process I wish on no one to have to go through the coronial inquest process. So after there's a death in custody, the coroner's office is notified and there's an investigation then, that's done by, the police internal unit when a death's in police custody, an investigation into, sort of what's happened, and they'll make their report and all of the evidence is sort of pulled together and goes to the coroner's office. And unfortunately, sadly, there's a long wait. The coroner's court, Miss Wynne's family had to wait 2.5 years after her death until she was able to sit through the inquest and hear all the evidence, including the CCTV footage that had been taken of her final conscious moments. So the coroner's process, we had a couple of days of inquest. They pull in, the police officers, anyone that was there, the ambulance officers, all the witnesses to give evidence. And we had our barrister there who was able to ask questions on behalf of the family and really challenge the police and medical staff, for accountability and really, I guess, owning up to failures that occurred in their treatment of Miss Wynne. And then we've had to wait another 6 months for the coroner's findings, which were handed down in April, to sort of see what the coroner made of the situation and what facts he found, led to the sad death of Miss Wynne.
Mm.
And the coroner will then make recommendations for changes, I guess, with the hope that these events don't happen again. So in the case of Miss Wynne, there was one recommendation for further training around police and, putting people in the prone position, not to put weight on the back of, you know, people. And unfortunately, in this case, you know, the officer was, you know, a solid man, and you know, she's a young woman. You know, just that weight. So the coroner really drew attention to that.
I just can't understand if he was a big man, and she was obviously a smaller woman, and by the sounds of it, wasn't fighting back or anything. Why we'd put himself in that position in the first place. And I'm sorry, Karina, I just get really frustrated when I hear the word recommendations from coroner's reports. Yeah. I mean, from 1991, they've just failed us. And it must be so hard for you as a lawyer in there fighting the fight on the front line, representing families like Auntie Jenny and that. And, you know, it's just seems so hopeless sometimes.
Frustrating to us to go through 5 days of evidence in the coroner's court for the coroner to really make a finding that there needs to be more training. You know, police, we heard evidence that the police are trained in this, and unfortunately we're not seeing, you know, they're trained in the dangers of you know, the prone position and of, you know, the risks of positional asphyxia, you know, sadly, you know, a word that we hear all too often, you know, in death in custody cases. And to just have, you know, a recommendation for further training was just a real slap in the face, and it was incredibly disappointing. And, you know, we raised, you know, issues of, you know, we raised the recommendations that had been, you know, from the, you know, Royal Commission into deaths in custody, you know, and we're still coming back to these recommendations, you know, 30 years later to say, you know, if these things have been implemented at the time and in the time since, you know, things might have been different.
100%.
But out of that findings, Danny, out of the findings, one recommendation, but the coroner, he actually had about 5 criticisms of the justice system and the police office behaviour in this incident. So, really, there should have been more recommendations. I mean, how much more training do the police officers need?
Yeah.
You know?
Why don't they get the proper training in the first place in the academy?
Yeah.
You know, why are they coming out like absolute clowns, cowboys, and doing stupid... I can't swear, sorry.
Well, really, when they apprehended her and took her to the side of the road, they could have had her standing up in a standing position, put her handcuffs on her in the front of her, or sat her down or something like that. They did not need to put her in a prone position.
No, and I know...
they just nailed her to the ground and took her out right there and then.
Yeah, it's just... I know there's been parallels drawn between the George Floyd case, the knee on the neck. Can I just say, this absolutely annoys the crap out of me, is that we have to wait for something in America, you know, Black Lives Matter, for us in Australia to do something and react. How come, you know, I just wonder, how come white Australia and even our mob didn't jump on the streets for Miss Wynn? You know, and it just takes the George Floyd sort of tragedy over there to spark us up over here, you know. So, yeah, I find that completely deflating as well. But, you know, it's that same sort of thing, isn't it? It's that police bullying and...
Yeah, very similar. Yeah. I mean, it was uncalled for, you know. Like, even the coroner said that would there be any other way to apprehend her besides putting her in the prone position? He questioned that in the court, didn't he, Karina?
Yeah, you know, and this is the thing, you know, the coroner can ask questions of the police, and, you know, certainly our barrister did, you know, ask all these questions, you know. There's so many other ways of you know, particularly someone that's mentally unwell, you know, really, you know, she's not a criminal. It's not like, you know, they needed to, you know, that they were going to take her to jail or put her in a police cell, you know. For someone that's, you know, struggling with mental health and is, you know, going to be taken to, you know, hospital to get the treatment that she needs, you know, just, you know, there's so many different options available to police. And I think that's the thing, you know, we don't want to be looking back at this in hindsight and saying, look, there's so many other things you could have done. You know, it's really up to, I guess, police to be, you know, I guess, thinking about these things in the moment and really, you know, going, what's going to be helpful here? And, you know, unfortunately, we've seen these failings time and time again.
Yeah, well, my granddaughter didn't even commit a crime. She didn't have a weapon, like a gun or a knife or anything like that. She didn't struggle. She didn't utter a word. As soon as they apprehended her, She didn't say a word. Those police officers said that she didn't utter one word. So, you know, and for a mental health person, I mean, they should have been, they should have apprehended her in a different way. You know, it was unnecessary. And I reckon that's a lack of duty of care right there and then. You know, there was no sensitivity, you know, no reassurance and saying, oh, well, we're not going to take you to jail. We just want to talk to you or something like that. But that didn't happen, did it?
No, yeah. No, it didn't. I mean, you know, this it just seems so completely pointless. The whole thing. I'm just really baffled. Like, the more we talk about it, I'm just, yeah, my heart's breaking a bit here. Karina.
Can we talk about the internal affairs investigation, Karina? How did that go down? I mean, that police officer, he didn't interview the right police. And when he wrote up his report and he handed it to somebody else to turn up in the coroner's office to be questioned, and he didn't even sign the report. How negligent is that?
So, Danny, I'll just take us back. So we were talking about the coronial inquest process previously, and I said, the police do an investigation. So that is the Internal Affairs Unit in WA Police, and they did an investigation, you know, interviewed the officers, statements, and I guess this is, you know, they're supposed to be, you know, looking at this and sort of saying, you know, is there anything that could have been done differently? And incredibly disappointingly, they said no, all policies were followed, it was all done correctly. And the coroner, you know, to his credit, was very critical of the investigation into it. There was CCTV, and when you match up the police statements against the the CCTV, you know, they say we pulled her up as soon as we could, when in reality, you know, she was unfortunately held down for much longer, than was initially admitted. That's sort of something that we're really looking at. You know, this issue of police investigating police, you know, and not really having the accountability, you know, to be able to bring to justice. And so, looking forward, we've been doing work in this area, and we're certainly looking, into our options moving out of, you know, this case, to be making change and really, you know, be pushing for independent investigation and to be pushing, for police not to be investigating police anymore and for the changes that need to be made to be made, you know. As we're saying, you know, we're seeing the same recommendations come up again and again. You know, coroners make these recommendations and they aren't implemented on the ground, by police. And you know, that means we're seeing these cases come up, you know, these similar cases come up again and again.
Yeah. How powerful is the coroner? How much power do they actually have when giving out recommendations? And then what's the responsibility to take them up?
Yeah, so the coroner, the coroner is sort of acts as that, I guess, an independent investigator. So coroners used to be magistrates, so they're familiar with, you know, the criminal law system, and they, you know, run these inquests into these deaths, so they're able to sort of, you know, ask questions. And I guess that process is a bit of accountability, but with recommendations, coroners make these recommendations and it's entirely up to, you know, governments, it's entirely up to the WA Police, WA Health, to be implementing these recommendations. And the coroner has no authority to, you know, to make these things happen. They, you know, can refer back, and this coroner did. He said, look, I've made recommendations in other inquests about these issues and they haven't been taken up, so I'm not going to make them again.
Yeah.
But, you know, and it's really disappointing, I guess, you know, that it's entirely, you know, beyond their power for these things to be taken up, and particularly when we've seen, you know, repeat recommendations that could really change, you know, things future, you know, for our mob and their interactions with police or health, you know, and getting help for, you know, the help that they need. It's just incredibly frustrating. And I echo your frustrations, Danny.
Yeah.
Being on the front line working in this, it's difficult.
Can I just ask there, so, you know, they're obviously a toothless tiger in a sense, right? But they're even making recommendations, and they're saying themselves that they're not getting taken up. So they're saying, I'm not going to do that recommendation again. I'll do another one, or I just won't do one. Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and we saw that, you know, in this inquest, you know, that it's, you know, referring back to, or, you know, here's my recommendations, go and look at those from other inquests. You know, I think maybe by thinking, you know, if I'm wording it differently, you know, if I'm watering my recommendation down to training, then maybe something will be done. But, you know, it's quite frustrating, I guess, probably for them as well, to know that these things are going on and that, unfortunately, changes.
If only we had a legal system where those recommendations had to be implemented in a legal sense. Across the states and the territories and federally. I mean, does the Attorney General's departments play any role in this?
Well, we've had discussions about, you know, it would be helpful to, you know, be able to come back and be some accountability for these recommendations, you know, 1 year after an inquest, going and, you know, having a look and seeing whether anything has changed, and some accountability for that. But unfortunately, really, it's a matter of advocacy. And, you know, sometimes we do see changes, but, you know, unfortunately, the legal system, and then we're looking then at, politics and funding, you know, it's slow to, you know, to make these changes and to learn from these mistakes. And, you know, I guess it's really up to, you know, governments to put their money where their mouth is. You know, if we want to stop deaths in custody, then, you know, the coroners are putting these recommendations out there and they're just not being adopted. And so I think, you know, there needs to be accountability at a political level, and that's what we're, you know, pushing for. And we push, you know, with advocacy, you know, journalism, you know, media, getting things out there and sort of really raising awareness about the fact that, you know, these things aren't being fixed.
I'm actually really disappointed
well, that's
in
right.
our... Sorry, Aunt, you
Danny,
go ahead.
Because when my son passed away in 1999, there was about three or four recommendations written down by the coroner. And, well, they're still sitting on paper. They haven't been implemented. And 20 years later, we've still got deaths in custody. So it's a shame, really, that those recommendations are not taken up and enforced. We need action. We don't need to be sitting down on paper, you know, because they're not worth a thing if they're not implemented, eh?
Yeah, that's why I'm so frustrated.
People dying.
You've been through this in a cyclic manner, and I've never actually spoken to anyone that's been through this in a generational sense like you, so I'm a little bit rattled, to be honest, because it is hitting me a little bit. But, you know, I find it so frustrating, and that's why I was asking Karina around, you know, how do we make this, actually these implementations, or the recommendations, sorry, actually get implemented, because we don't want you or any other family members to have to go through this again. And it's a level of frustration from us that have been on the front line for a lot of years. And I don't know how our lawyers do it, because you do so much work and you don't get any results historically, you know, other than the fact that you're advocating for our beautiful families that have been through so much.
And there's a lot of other people who's lost their loved ones through, like, the prone position.
Yep.
I mean, that should be abolished unless it is really necessary to do so, you know. And it's like nothing's changed since the 20 years ago when I lost my son. So we're still losing our mob. We're still losing our Aboriginal people, you know, and this has got to stop, because, I mean, it's just heart-wrenching. I mean, it's just like, you know, it's just like somebody just reaches into your chest and pulls your heart right out, and you're left with nothing. You're just like, you feel useless, and you feel like nothing. No justice is served. There's never been a police officer held accountable or pleaded guilty in this state, ever. Mm. So when is this going to be stopped? And when are they going to be accountable for, like, lack of duty of care, the insensitive, you know? They've got no sensitivity and empathy for our people. It's, you know, needs to stop, and there's got to be change. Mm.
No justice, no peace, eh, Aunt?
Yeah, nothing at all.
Karina, one thing that you said before was applying, you know, all us mob, everybody really, applying political pressure on this issue around deaths in custody. Can you tell us what the National Justice Project is doing around that? Because I find, you know, we've got more Aboriginal centres in federal parliament than we've ever had. They've all been silenced when it comes to they've all been so silent when it comes to death in custody. I can't remember any of them rattling the cage. Even, you know, our Minister for Indigenous Affairs, Ken Wyatt, when the Cumman J. Walker case was handed down, he backed the political process even though the next day it was proved to be completely corrupt. I mean, you know, just, you know, we need leadership on this issue at a federal level, and I hope the National Justice Project and others can attain that.
Yeah, and that's why we, you know, not only do we do this legal work, you know, we run strategic litigation to try and identify these cases where we think, you know, they might be able to, you know, do change. You know, we're not giving up on, you know, the Miss Wynn case. We're going to be pushing through with the family and you know, doing what we can, you know, outside the process. I think that's why, you know, advocacy and litigation, you know, can go hand in hand, where there's not, you know, where you don't get any justice through the system, or, you know, things aren't being implemented. You know, we, you know, put in submissions to different inquiries. You know, we've been speaking with people about, you know, there's a Senate inquiry into missing and murdered Aboriginal women and children, you know, really raising our voice. You know, the voices of our mob where we can, you know, in kind of the halls of power to be able to push for change. And, yeah, I mean, I think that's it. It's really about, you know, the answers are there. It's really about, you know, politicians and those with the power putting their money where their mouth is and funding, you know, additional support, you know, having culturally safe, you know, the coronial system, you know, the justice system being culturally safe for families, you know, there being justice at the end and not these recommendations, you know, on paper, as Aunty Jenny has said. And so that's part of the work that we do as the National Justice Project. You know, we're fighting to end systemic discrimination, and, you know, we you know, partner with as many people as we can, I guess, to really push that agenda forward, you know, to push for change in justice, in health, in prisons, in the way that our mob are being treated.
Yeah, it's just so great to hear about the work of the National Justice Project, along with other places like the Dajua Foundation, you know, because it does give our families out there, like Aunty Jen's, a bit of hope, a bit of support. The feeling of not being alone must, you know, make other families feel you know, really good and valued. Does that sort of provide you with a bit of hope going forward as you continue the fight for justice, Aunty Jen? I mean, it's so hard.
Yeah.
But you are so inspiring at the same time, Auntie.
Yeah. Well, Jerry, Georgia Garkas and Megan Cracker have been very supportive through this Miss Wynn case, and I don't know what I would do if I didn't have people like them to be supporting and to advise you and support you and talk on your behalf and arrange like media statements so our voice can be heard. And, you know, without them, where would we go to? I mean, we'd just be left in the dark. We wouldn't know which avenues to take and what lawyers to go to get help, you know. So their job is endless, and I really, really support them.
Yeah, because even
thank you is just not good enough, you know. They're so good in helping me, you know.
Yeah, I don't think they want to be thanked though,
It's an honour and a privilege to work alongside families like, you know, Aunty Jenny, as you said, you know, Danny. I'm just, you know, it's you know, frustrating to see these issues, but, you know, to stand beside women, you know, like Aunty Jenny, these strong, you know, role models in our community to, you know, to fight for justice is an honour for me as a young lawyer, a young Aboriginal lawyer. Yeah. And so,
Many thanks goes out to Karina and George Newhouse, because, you know, where would I be without people like this? I mean, you know, way back in the day, they didn't have these other lawyers who were compassionate and to stand by us and support us and try and do the best they can, you know?
Well, I remember not even 10 years ago there was no support around for Aboriginal families going through death in custody. It was only our own families that jumped in and just helped, you know, and then we see, you know, the amazing April Day start a foundation because of what happened to her mother, you know, and I just find you're all just so incredible. And anything we can do as black media to support you, mob, our microphone, our TV cameras are always on for you, mob. Where to from here, Karina, as the case goes forward? I know, you want to keep fighting for justice. Where do we go? Where do we go? How do we go forward, you know, and keep up this fight and try and get justice?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's, I guess, we're looking for a responsibility, really, you know, going back to police and saying, look, well, the coroner's made these critical findings, you know, what are you, you know, what are you going to be doing about it? And, you know, really putting that pressure on, you know, we'll be trying to meet, I guess, with change makers to sort of, you know, and politicians as well, to push for, you know, funding for change, for the adoption of these recommendations as well. And, you know, for the family, there's, you know, sort of civil action that can be taken, you know, to sort of try and hold them account, hold, you know, police to account, and really, yeah, I guess potentially, you know, get some, you know, I mean, money is nothing compared to what they've lost, but to get some compensation for what they've gone through. And, you know, sometimes, unfortunately, you know, putting that pressure on, you know, that money talks, really. And so, yeah. We'll be doing, pushing in every avenue we can for, you know, political accountability for, you know, for these recommendations to be adopted, and for, yeah, and for the family to get, you know, the compensation for what they've gone through for you know, these repeated failings from police and from health.
Oh, they absolutely need to be compensated. Yeah. And we all know that, you know, we all struggle financially as blackfellas. So, you know, if we can be compensated because of, you know, tragedy and loss at the hands of police, and so be it, and pay up police, because, you know, a roof over our head for our families is the most important thing we can have, and not many of us have it.
What's her name? They haven't got their mum to stand by and her three little children, so, you know, compensation for her three little children to help them get a good education, and hopefully one of them will take up and be a lawyer to fight for justice for our people, you know? Yeah, so what I'd really like to see is the police officers being accountable for their actions. It's what they should have done and never done.
Imagine the day. Imagine one day and a police comes in the courthouse and goes, hey, yeah, I did the wrong thing. I was guilty. I need to be charged for this.
Yeah. You know, I mean, what if it would have happened to their granddaughter or their daughter?
Exactly.
It would be a different matter. I mean, you know, why aren't they owning up and being accountable for their actions? It's just disgraceful. And it's people like me and all our family and all my other grandkids, my children and that, we all suffer. We're left on this earth to suffer for the injustice that's been dealt to our people, you know. And there's a whole lot of other people out there who feels the pain like I do, and it's just indescribable.
Yeah. But, you know, can I just say something, Aunt? Can I just say something on that, Aunt? We're lucky we got you. We're lucky we got your voice here, and we're lucky we got you giving advice and support and, you know, courage to other families out there too, letting them know they're not alone, you know. So, I just completely take my hat off.
And that's what I'd really like to do is sometimes it just gets too hard and you just feel like giving up, you know, and you don't know where to go to get the professional help. Well, my message to everybody out there who has lost a loved one through dealing with police, the police involvement, stand up and go as far as you can, get the help and fight for justice for our mob, our Aboriginal people and our loved ones, because, you know, there is help out there, and let's fight for justice for our people.
Thanks for that, Aunt. Thanks for coming on the show again, and thank you to Karina Hawtrey and also all the mob there at the National Justice Project for the work that you do for our families and advocating. I know you just don't want to be thanked, but I'm going to use my platform today to say thank you for your mob, because I know how hard you work and how busy you are, and it's a thankless, you know, sometimes very depressing job, but we need you on the front line. So thank you, Karina.
Thank you, Danny.
And thank you to Danny and Karina. Much appreciated, eh?
Yep. Anytime you've got something to yarn, just contact me. Come back on here at Let's Talk on Murray Country, because this black media was set up exactly for mob like you, Aunt, and also yourself, Karina, okay?
Yeah. Right. Thanks,
Danny.
Okay. Thank you, Danny.
You've been listening to The Tragic Case of Miss Wynn. We've touched on some tough subjects today, so if you're out there, your mob, and you're triggered, please get help. Go see your AMS. Go see your black doctors. You can ring helplines, you can ring Lifeline, because we have touched on some tough subjects. So please get help. And as Aunty Jen said, look after yourselves out there and keep fighting. I'm Danny Teese Johnson. You've been listening to Let's Talk.